surprised I didn't even introduce myself at the beginning. I'm Mark Sawyer from UC San Diego School of Medicine and the San Diego Immunization Partnership, which is a collaborative effort between the medical school and the San Diego County Health Department. And I am primarily going to talk about some of the strategies that were used in the hospitals to try and promote influenza immunization, the strategies that led to the data that Wendy presented in the first presentation. And the title of this talk, as we turn this over to our title guru in San Diego, is Can You Build a Better Mousetrap? What's New with Healthcare Immunization, Healthcare Worker Influenza Immunization in San Diego? Objectives, as you leave here, you will be able to list, although you probably already can, the common myths among healthcare workers regarding influenza immunization. Describe the interventions used in the San Diego hospitals to try to overcome those myths and promote influenza immunization, and discuss the remaining barriers to improve healthcare worker influenza immunization. Wendy already gave the preliminary background about this study. This was a CDC-funded project. We started out with 14 collaborating hospitals, which represented 75% of the inpatient beds in San Diego County. We've subsequently expanded now to 17 hospitals, and it's a collaboration between a number of community groups and those hospitals. The myths are the ones that you've heard over and over again at this conference and also that are held in the general community. I think the challenge for all of us is to come up with strategies to try and penetrate these myths. I never get the flu, vaccine has side effects and makes me sick, and or the vaccine doesn't work. And unfortunately, there's some grain of truth to each of these, but basically it's not sufficient to be a reasonable argument against giving the vaccine. This slide was also showed in Wendy's presentation. I just want to make one or emphasize one point from it. I think it's quite clear from all the data that convenience is one of the most important issues in getting healthcare workers immunized. So in our collective San Diego hospitals, through the various strategies that were utilized, 66% of the vaccinees received their vaccine because the vaccine came to them rather than them having to go somewhere to receive it. And I think that's a key message and a key strategy, and I would encourage everybody to try and come up with additional programs to make this as convenient as possible so that we at least eliminate that one barrier to receipt of influenza vaccination. The various strategies used in our hospitals are similar to those that we've also heard about at this conference. That is a peer immunizer or ward staff immunizer, where someone from the ward actually delivers the vaccine on the ward at each shift. The mobile carts. Mass clinics still have a role for those who are motivated to get immunized, and those are cost-effective and efficient ways to immunize. Taking advantage of meetings and events in the hospital, including meetings of the high-level administration to make it quite visible that immunizations are important, employee health clinic, and then a few other strategies. These are those same methods of delivering of immunization, again, across the hospitals, and I just show this to illustrate the relative time points. The bar colors represent the months beginning in September at which not much activity occurred. As is generally seen, most of the activity occurred in October and November, although we were able to encourage hospitals during the 2006-07 season to continue immunizing into December and even into January. That theme has continued this year. We have some hospitals that are still immunizing. That, of course, has been helped by the late onset influenza season across the country this year. This is from our first year data, which we've presented before, but I wanted to reiterate it. It's just the information about the reasons that healthcare workers don't choose to get immunized. This is from the survey we have obtained in the first year. Of those not getting immunized, 44% said the reason was that they didn't feel that they were in a priority group or that they were healthy and not susceptible to influenza for some magical reason. Vaccine had side effects, 19%. Vaccine doesn't work, 14%. In that first year, a very small number of our healthcare workers received the nasal vaccine. We've been trying to promote the nasal vaccine as one strategy to get around primarily the needle phobic people who won't say that's the reason they're not getting immunized and use one of these other reasons. as a disguise for that. And despite that, as you'll see, we have still relatively low uptake of the nasal vaccine, and I'm not sure why that is. The interventions that I'm going to just briefly highlight today that were utilized to try and promote vaccine educational programs, and these include mandatory educational programs that each employee had to go through, PowerPoint training modules, and our own project developed a presentation which we would go out and offer to the hospitals to deliver to their staff. In California, there's a state law that passed that went into effect this last influenza season, which requires declination statements to be signed by hospitals. So I'll spend a little time talking about how that was rolled out and what we can say about the efficacy of that, and then other procedures to ensure compliance with influenza immunization. UCSD Med Center, which is a middle-sized tertiary care hospital in San Diego, was one of the hospitals that implemented a mandatory training. They had 3,300 employees go through that training. At the end of that, there was a declination statement, and some of the data obtained from that is that, or as a result of this program, close to 2,000 employees received their vaccine at the institution. 500 received it elsewhere, and that's an important number to keep in mind as you're trying to ramp up your program and improve your tracking of immunization. You do need to try and capture vaccine received outside and decide whether you're going to require documentation of that as you increase the stringency with which you evaluate whether employees are actually immunized or not. And in this hospital, 783 of those employees declined to receive the vaccination. They asked in that form the reasons, and you see the reasons at the bottom, and they're the reasons that we've already talked about. Here's another example, this is a large healthcare system with five hospitals in San Diego County. They developed an online training module which was required and included a declination statement at the end. This is some of the language from the declination component of that, just to give you a flavor of the differences or some of the ways people present the information. Basically describing or making the employee acknowledge that they understand that how influenza is transmitted and the impact of influenza nationally and the fact that they themselves are in fact susceptible to influenza. And the second checkbox there emphasized personal hygiene methods that could be used in addition to influenza vaccination to try and decrease transmission. One of our hospitals developed a little movie, so to lighten the mood around here, I thought I would show that movie, so get your popcorn out. The next year, they're going to require that their employees participate in this movie, and if anybody is interested in this module, at the end, there's an email contact for the person who developed it. They'd be happy to work with you to develop one similar for your hospital.
Yeah, how do you like it so far?
What is influenza?
Influenza? An Italian sports car?
Influenza is a contagious respiratory illness caused by the influenza virus. It can result in mild to severe illness and sometimes can even cause death.
Nice.
Who gets influenza?
I get it. I don't get it.
People of all ages get influenza.
Influenza!
Every year in the United States, from 5 to 20% of the population get the flu. More than 200,000 people are hospitalized from flu complications, and about 36,000 die from the flu. The best way to protect yourself from seasonal influenza is to get a vaccination every year. Two types of vaccination are available. inactivated vaccination, or the flu shot, and live attenuated influenza vaccine, or nasal spray.
Yikes!
Who should get immunized?
Oh, there's a nice graphic.
Anyone at high risk for complications, anyone who may transmit influenza, and healthcare workers. The best time to get vaccinated is October through November, but it is not too late to get a vaccination even in December or later. It is best to get the vaccine early because it can take up to 2 weeks for the body to develop immunity against influenza. Does the vaccine work? Yes, it works well in both the pediatric and adult population. In adults, the ability of the influenza vaccine to protect a person depends on age, health status, timing of the vaccination, and the similarity of the vaccine match to the virus strains. Can injectable influenza vaccine cause influenza? No. The injectable vaccine is made from inactivated or killed virus.
Kill it! Kill it! Before it spread!
Is it over?
What I like best was the acting.
So the actual video is 8 or 9 minutes long. We just cut out some of the key elements to give you a flavor of what it was. And here are the credits. No animals were harmed in the making of this movie. And Mike Flanders is the individual who put this together. He's happy to hear from you if you'd like to get this or get a version of this that could be customized. Uh-oh. Yes, that was shown to the employees, and as I said, next year they're going to be required to look at that video before they sign their declination statement or hopefully receive their influenza vaccine. Okay, let me now move on to declination statements. As I mentioned, California legislation was passed that require all hospitals to offer influenza vaccine free of charge and to record declination statements from healthcare workers who choose not to receive vaccination. A variety of statements were developed by the hospitals, and this is the first year at which those have been implemented with variable success and variable enforcement or consequences should you choose not to sign the declination statement. This is the actual language from the law, and the underlying part is the key part, the emphasizing the need for the declination statement. Here's an example of the language from Kaiser's declination statement. As you can see, there's a number of bullets on the left so that the employee is acknowledging that they've been offered the vaccine, that they've been provided educational material on influenza and the risk if they are not immunized, that they've received those materials, and that if they're signing the declination, it doesn't mean they can't change their mind and subsequently receive vaccine. And on the right, as you can see, they tried to obtain data on the reasons why people were not being immunized. Here's another example. This is from Scripps Hospital System in San Diego, which is another large five hospital system. Theirs was a little bit kinder and gentler. Understand that due to my occupational exposure, I may be at risk and that I've received education. And they also, on the bottom, as you can see, tried to obtain reasons for not being immunized. Some of the statements are fairly strongly worded, suggesting that you might die if you don't get the influenza vaccine. And others are simply have a checkbox that says, I choose not to get immunized and don't ask for the explanation. This is the overall compliance in our hospitals. This is based on the hospital's reporting of data, either with receipt of vaccine or, for those not vaccinated, completion of a signed declination. So as you can see, overall, somewhere around 3/4 of the employees complied with either vaccination or completing a declination statement. Although there is this legislation in California, there is no enforcement or monitoring that was built into it. So It's really up to the hospital to decide how vigorously to support this. As has been mentioned, JCO is looking at influenza vaccination as one of their quality standards, and they may well, at least in California where this is required, they may ask to see some data on compliance, and that, of course, may drive some hospitals to work a little harder at participating in declinations. There was resistance to declinations. Many of the employees sort of challenged the need to sign it and comply. Some had to be shown the actual legal precedent or the legal language that this was, in fact, law in California. Many hospitals felt or learned through this process that it's important to have discussions with the key stakeholders, most key among them the nursing unions, and to deal with any sort of concerns about HIPAA and confidentiality. And the overall consensus from our group is that you probably should have a relative positive wording to your declination statement because just the statement itself has a sort of a negative feel to it, so at least you can be positive in the language, just emphasizing that you're out to protect the interest of the healthcare worker, their family, and of course the patients. These are among the policies for unimmunized healthcare workers despite declination statements or for those who signed a declination. Most of the hospitals have no policy to deal with unimmunized healthcare workers. One hospital is requiring unimmunized workers to wear a mask during the influenza season. And we heard that also in yesterday's presentation about healthcare workers. So that's one strategy that's being used in some places. One hospital is going to place, or did place this year, unimmunized non-compliant employees on administrative leave during the influenza season. Now, the loophole there is that was unimmunized and non-compliant. So in other words, you signed a declination statement not to receive the vaccine, then you were still allowed to work, which of course doesn't make very good sense, but that was as far as they were able to get in this first year of implementation. And then one hospital is going to take unimmunized and or non-compliant employees and terminate them if they weren't compliant by a deadline. So there is variation in the vigor with which these are being supported, and more importantly, what happens to unimmunized healthcare workers, you know, with or without declination statements. We also collected data on and are trying to now work with these same hospitals on implementation of Tdap vaccine. My observations in San Diego is that the uptake and enthusiasm for Tdap has been relatively slow. Half of our hospitals, or our original 14 hospitals, are offering Tdap only to so-called high-risk healthcare workers, usually defined as working in emergency rooms, NICUs, or maternal child health units. The other half are offering them to all employees. But none of them have a vigorous promotional campaign the way they now all do for influenza vaccine. It's something that's sort of under the radar. If you show up at occupational health, you may get told that you should get a Tdap vaccine, but there's not a vigorous campaign. We did have one system, the Kaiser system, which included Tdap on their mobile carts when they were providing influenza vaccine. That obviously should be a very effective strategy. They were able to do this because they had lists of the employees that could be taken on the mobile carts to track. Of course, the big difference with Tdap is you only need one, not one every year. So it is important to find out who has received one in the past. Other of our hospitals had difficulty with the logistics of that and did not include Tdap in any of their mobile programs because they didn't have a mechanism to track whether or identify whether those employees had been previously immunized. So we're working with the hospitals to sort of share best practices on methods that could allow you to include Tdap in along with your influenza programs. So once we get finished solving influenza, this will be our next big challenge in hospitals, so we have plenty of work to do. I want to acknowledge my colleagues at the San Diego Immunization Branch who put a lot of effort into this project with the San Diego HIP. If you want more information on it or didn't get a handout that were at the back, you could contact Michelle Jelinski, who's the project coordinator for the hospital project, and her email is listed there. So we have just a couple of minutes for questions or comments. There is a microphone over here. If you wouldn't mind coming to the microphone, and please identify yourself.
And for those that want a copy of the kit, I've got some up here.
question is, did you do a breakdown with physicians, nurses, clerical, ancillary type staff in hospitals?
With regard to receipt of vaccine?
Yes.
Yes, we did, and as has been seen in many other programs, the physicians for once are complying better than the nurses and other staff in this health prevention measure. Our physician rates were somewhere in the 70% to 80% range, I think, compared to more like 60% for nursing staff. And as I think Wendy showed data that the administrative staff, surprisingly, were very compliant with this, even though they're not really somebody who's at high risk of transmission of influenza.
Well, nurses can be that way.
No comment.
Hi, Bev Hager from Seattle, Washington. I'm just wondering what your actual vaccination rates were for your employees at your organizations.
Well, I mean, that's an excellent question. I think the short answer is I don't think we really know exactly what our vaccination rates are. Our hospitals will quote us rates in the 80 to 90% range. The random digit dialing data that Wendy presented show that the rate is 70%. And the self-reported coverage rates from the employees ranged anywhere from 50% to 75%. So I personally think that's one of the major challenges we face in all hospitals is getting an accurate, reproducible number that you can really track.
Thank you.
Kathy Lloyd from Reno, Nevada. Are you aware of any hospitals that have a mandatory influenza policy for healthcare workers throughout the hospital or in high-risk areas? Anybody?
There she is in the back. Seattle Mason University in Seattle is the only hospital I know of with a mandatory policy. Now, we have one hospital that is considering that for this coming year, but they haven't yet implemented it.
Maybe
so none
JCO
of our hospitals
will help us eventually.
Personally, I think mandatory programs are the way to go. So I would encourage you to learn from the Seattle Virginia Mason experience in Seattle and try to see if you can push that through. I think once we get the inertia going, that will take up some steam.
Okay. One other quick question: did the union give you problems with this, or were they supportive of this, the immunization declination?
They objected somewhat to the declination, but since it was state law, they really didn't have a leg to stand on. But, you know, in discussions with the union, they, you know, vigorously support the myths of not receiving vaccination as valid reasons that their union members should not be required to be immunized. So that's where the work continues.